From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, April 18th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
The Maine legislature pulled an all-nighter Wednesday night as they raced to complete a budget and vote on a slew of bills, including several gun control measures, during the final day of the legislative session. But the hectic day also illuminated some of the long-standing tensions between Democratic Governor Janet Mills and members of her Democratic caucus. Maine Public State House correspondent Kevin Miller was there at the State House and joins us now to talk about what lawmakers did and didn't do on this final day of the session. So, Kevin, it was a bit of a marathon last night. What time did the legislature actually adjourn?
Yeah, so the House was the last to adjourn, and I believe they did that just before 6 o'clock this morning.
Wow, it sounds like a lot of these delays as well, they were caused by disagreements over how to spend or not spend the budget surplus that the state is sitting on. What did they finally settle on?
Yeah, so the supplemental budget contains $76 million for affordable housing and emergency housing programs, along with $21 million, basically to essentially make sure the state continues to pick up 55% of the K-12 education costs. And then they provided about $26 million for nursing homes. A big thing was lawmakers also approved $50 million in emergency relief to help communities rebuild infrastructure. So we're talking like fishing piers and sewer systems that were damaged by this spate of really severe storms that we had over the winter.
Yeah, and as I understand it, there were partisan differences between Democrats and Republicans, but it also seems like the big divisions last night were really among Democrats, right? What was going on there?
Yeah, that's right. So for the past few weeks, there's been a contingent of Democrats, and most of them were in the state Senate, that have been saying that Maine should be tapping into more of its surplus or even the state's $1 billion rainy day fund to address some really long-standing needs. You know, for instance, they want to provide more money to nursing homes, and they say that the state should be doing more to increase the salaries of the ed techs and other school support staff that do a lot of the work in schools. But Mills accused them of basically trying to blow a hole in the state budget because these would all incur recurring costs. Those tensions had been building for more than a week, and then they really came to a head just before midnight in the Senate. That's when Democrats, they voted to add these initiatives to the budget. And one of the people that was leading this push was Senate President Troy Jackson of Allegash. And he's term limited in the Senate. So yesterday was one of his last days leading the Senate. And as you can hear here, he got pretty emotional when he was talking about the need for this additional funding.
You know, I've been here 20 years and I came here and spent a lot of time away from my family, a lot of time away from my children, because I thought that I was fighting for people that needed a voice, people I cared about. And in my final day, maybe that's what makes me so stubborn, that I'm not willing to give up on something that seems so simple to all of us.
But ultimately, President Jackson and others realized that they didn't have the votes in the Democratic-controlled House. So rather than risk imploding this whole budget bill and delaying the emergency storm assistance, they backed off.
So, Kevin, let's move on to one of the other big issues before the legislature this session, and that was guns. They debated a lot of gun bills this year. Can you give us a roundup of what policies around this issue actually made it through?
Yes, so that's right. I'd say this was the big issue of the session because of the mass shooting in Lewiston last October. And it's really now very clear that the shooting had an impact in Maine because historically the Maine legislature has been really resistant to expanding gun control laws, regardless of which party was in power. But that definitely changed this year. Lawmakers passed a bill requiring a 72-hour waiting period on new gun purchases. They also expanded background checks to private sales that are advertised. So if you are a regular person, not a licensed gun dealer, and you want to list your gun in, say, Uncle Henry's or on one of the many online gun marketplaces that are out there, you will have to have a gun dealer run a background check on that potential buyer. And then lastly, lawmakers also passed a bill to ban bump stocks, which are these mechanical or electronic devices that essentially turn a semi-automatic gun into a rapid-fire weapon, more like a machine gun.
And there was also a push to make Maine a red flag state. What happened to that bill?
That bill never was actually voted on in the House or the Senate, so it essentially died on the vine. But lawmakers did agree to Governor Mills' request to tweak Maine's yellow flag law, which would make it easier for police to take someone into, quote, protective custody, which is the first step to begin the gun confiscation process under the yellow flag law.
Yeah, so the bills that did pass, they're now headed to Governor Mills. Do we know if she will sign them?
Well, we know she'll sign the background checks expansion and the changes to the yellow flag law because that was her bill. But she hasn't commented on the 72-hour waiting period or the bump stocks ban. Governor Mills, she's a Democrat, but she's also a very moderate Democrat when it comes to guns. And gun owners' rights groups like the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine and the NRA, they've been strongly opposing this 72-hour waiting period and the bump stocks ban. So it's still unknown whether she would sign the bills, veto them, or allow them to become law without her signature.
And that was Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller. Nurses in Maine who say they're understaffed and overworked are expressing disappointment that a bill that would have established minimum staff ratios was rejected by state lawmakers. While they saw the proposal as a way to improve working conditions and patient care, hospitals strongly opposed it. Patty White has more.
Kelly Brennan says she loves to help people when they need it most. She works as a registered nurse in the neurotrauma unit at Maine Medical Center. But Brennan says she often oversees so many patients that she doesn't have time to provide the level of care they need.
You know, if we have five patients and they all have to walk three times a day and they all have to take pain meds on time and they all have to do this, we simply cannot be in every room at the same time. So somebody's care is delayed or they go without, and it's hard because we know that it doesn't have to be that way.
Brennan says bare minimum staffing is leaving nurses overstretched and exhausted. And when someone calls out sick, it exacerbates the problem. She remembers a day this winter when her unit was so short-staffed, she called a patient's family to see if they could help.
So we were at that point, like, let's just, you know, call family, see if they can come in and sit with their loved ones because we don't have the staff to do it.
And what do you say to the family at that, when you make that call?
You know, sorry, this is nothing, everything's okay, there's not an emergency. However, are you coming by to visit so-and-so today? Will you be able to stay? We don't have the staff to put a companion or a nurse, you know, one-to-one, and we don't want them to fall if you're going to be able to come in today. Like, that would be super helpful.
Some nurses have been so frustrated by staffing levels, they've quit. Sadie Terrell says she left her job at Maine Medical Center last year.
When I was at work, I just was constantly asked to do so much more work than I could and to just watch the patient suffering that was happening because of it.
12-hour shifts often grew to 14 hours, she says, with little to no time for meal or bathroom breaks. Both Terrell and Brennan say the situation will only get better if the state steps in. They're among nurses in the Maine State Nurses Association who want to establish minimum nurse staff ratios under state law. Advocates say it would improve nurse retention as well as patient care. But Sharon Boffman, the chief nursing officer for Maine Health, pushes back against the assertion that patient care is being compromised because of inadequate nurse staffing.
Our nurses do a fabulous job of taking care of our patients. I get compliments from patients all the time.
Boffman also points out that Maine Health's hospital quality ratings, and Maine medical centers in particular, get high marks. She says state-mandated ratios would make nurses' jobs harder because it would take away flexibility to make staffing decisions. And some nurses agree. Jana Drake is a nurse director at Maine Med.
First of all, there aren't enough nurses for this mandated ratio, but it's also more about the nurse's autonomy and the nurse's ability to look at what is this patient, what do they need, what are the resources that we have, and how do we use our resources? So some of that's just about our decision making.
The Maine Hospital Association paints a more dire scenario.
It is literally and not exaggerating the quickest way to ration care in the state of Maine.
President Stephen Michaud says mandated ratios would be impossible to meet because of a nationwide nursing shortage, including a shortage of 2,200 in Maine.
If the state steps in and says, you now have to have a certain number of nurses in order to keep your services open, There isn't a state, there isn't a hospital in the country that could comply with that. So there's only one answer to that. You'd have to shut down beds and shut down services. And that's why we oppose it.
But in California, a nurse staff ratio law has been in effect for 20 years. And Joanne Spetz of the University of California, San Francisco, who researches the healthcare workforce, says it has not caused hospitals to shut down services.
We heard anecdotally that there were increases in emergency room diversions in the short term, but we found no evidence that that was systematic or that it was persistent.
And Spetz says California's law has reduced nurse stress and boosted overall job satisfaction. But when it comes to improving patient outcomes, Spetz says staffing ratios aren't a silver bullet.
I think there's some indication that in the long term, they might be beneficial. There's a lot of theoretical reason to think that they should be beneficial, but the evidence is not entirely clear that they benefit patients.
That doesn't mean they shouldn't be considered, she says. And she encourages hospitals to explore the underlying reasons why some nurses support them.
They really are reflecting real concerns of their staff. And regardless of whether the legislation passes, they should be attentive to those concerns.
Even though the nurse staff ratio bill didn't pass this session, it received initial approval from the Senate. The Maine State Nurses Association views that as an indication that ratios are gaining momentum, and not just here. Several other states have also considered bills, and Oregon passed a nurse ratio law last year. The association says they're not giving up on trying to pass a law in Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Meanwhile, state lawmakers reversed course on Wednesday and approved a bill that will remove a roadblock in building a proposed wind terminal on Sears Island. Nicola Grisco reports.
The measure makes an exception to the state's sand dune protections and will allow the Department of Environmental Protection to consider permit applications for a proposed wind port on Sears Island. Chris Buchanan, with the volunteer-led Citizens to Protect Sears Island, says some Searsport residents are disappointed with the outcome on the last day of the legislative session.
We saw 2266 as both a stepping stone for the administration to pursue Sears Island as its preferred site for the wind port, and also an attack on environmental protections.
Buchanan says that the citizens group doesn't have a position on offshore wind, but will support legal challenges that other local and national groups are planning against the Sears Island proposal. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicola Grisco.
Starting this summer, Mainers who are trying to sell their residential or commercial properties will have to disclose flood risk before an offer is made. Judy East, the Bureau Director of Resource Information and Land Use Planning for the state, says the new law passed this month expands the definition of flood risk.
There's two different requirements for disclosure in the bill. One is if they're in the special flood hazard area, as mapped on the FEMA maps. And the other is if there has been a flooding event on their property. And the reason for that is there's more often now than ever before, there's flooding that is occurring outside of those special flood hazard areas.
East says FEMA only considers historical events in its mapping and is digitally updating them to make them more accurate. Digital maps for York and Cumberland counties will be available this summer, and towns will be required to adopt new FEMA ordinances to remain in the National Flood Insurance Program. Environmental advocates are criticizing new draft recommendations from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that they say won't restore salmon and other fish populations along the Kennebec River. The draft environmental impact statement was issued as part of the relicensing process for four dams operated by Brookfield Renewable. Commission staff are recommending relicensing the dams and implementing measures proposed by Brookfield, with additional modifications dictated by state and federal agencies. Nick Bennett with the Natural Resources Council of Maine says that the measures haven't worked on other rivers in the past.
This scheme that FERC has come up with has not worked on any other dam, on any other river system anywhere. And there's no reasonable expectation that it would work here.
FERC will hold two public meetings to collect comment on the draft statement next month. Dennis DeShane, who's serving a life sentence for the murder of 12-year-old Sarah Cherry in 1988, was back in court in Knox County today. As Caitlin Bedayan reports, DeShane is arguing for a new trial based on new DNA evidence.
At issue is new and enhanced testing of DNA on several items recovered from the crime scene in Bowdoin more than 3 decades ago. In 2022, the California-based Serological Research Institute found that Deshane is excluded as a contributor of DNA on 4 of the items, but that he could be included on 2 others. Deshane and his attorney, John Nail, argued that the new DNA testing results prove that Deshane could not have killed Cherry and that another man is responsible. Deshane has always maintained his innocence. But Assistant Attorney General Don Maycomer argues that the DNA evidence does not definitively exclude Deshane. He also argues that the samples are flawed because of their age and that they could have been subject to cross-contamination because of the way they were collected back in 1988. A judge will have to decide whether the evidence is sufficient to have resulted in a different verdict in the case. The hearing will continue Friday in Rockland. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
And the Somerset County Sheriff's Office has uncovered another illegal marijuana operation this week as law enforcement continues to investigate illicit grows in central Maine. Ari Snyder reports.
A team led by the Somerset County Sheriff's Department on Tuesday arrested one person and seized 3,400 marijuana plants and related equipment during a raid at a residence in the town of Harmony, north of Skowhegan. The raid was the result of a months-long investigation, according to the sheriff's office. Multiple agencies participated in the operation, including the Waterville Police Department, the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration, and U.S. Homeland Security. It's the latest in a string of illegal marijuana busts in central Maine. While investigators have divulged little information about the illicit grows, Maine's congressional delegation has repeatedly urged the Department of Justice to investigate reported ownership ties to Chinese nationals. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Louisa Stanchoff hasn't had much time to reflect on her debut album. It only came out last week, and she's on a tour of the Northeast with a show in Cambridge, Massachusetts on Thursday night. Born and raised in rural western Maine, Stanchoff now lives in the Mid-Coast and is promoting her music with help of her record label, using an approach that, by the standards of the digital era, might seem old school. Keith Shortall spoke with Stanchoff at her home in Warren.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Stanchoff recalls the powerful presence of Balkan folk music in her early life, sung a cappella, mostly by women, using multiple harmonies. And now, at the age of 30, she says that music still has an influence on her own songwriting.
I know you said you're sorry. I know you said you're gold. I know you wanted to align with everything you told. I see the paper clippings. I see the shape.
I would say so. I think unknowingly, my music does have a lot of dissonance in it, and it's very harmony-based. I love singing with other people, so a lot of my songs are, like, they kind of depend on the harmony. Like, the first song on my album is called Gold, and it's really not the same without the harmony being there the entire time, and there's a lot of dissonance within that.
I know you said you're sorry. I know you wanted to be settled in honesty like dust upon the lake. Yeah.
Oh. I always sung starting from a really young age, probably 3 or 4. I think my parents really started giving me attention for that. Like, they would encourage it a lot, and I really liked that. And then I think the first song that I wrote that really captured an audience, I was 17 years old, and I was working at this summer camp in Lincolnville called Tanglewood. And I shared this song that I wrote at the campfire that week, and everyone loved it, and somehow it got stuck in everyone's head.
Would you mind playing a little bit of it for me?
Sure.
Do you remember when you saw me crying all alone? You held my hand. Do you remember when you took me up
The following summer, I went back there and everyone was still singing it. And it ended up getting banned because it was so stuck in everyone's head. They were like, we cannot sing this song anymore. Louisa is allowed to sing it once a week at the end of the week. And other than that, it's banned. So then that's when I was really like, oh, I think I can write songs. And it actually means something to people. It's not just for me. So just hold me and tell me that you'll never leave me. Hold me.
Now you're living in Warren, Maine, and trying to promote yourself and promote your art. How do you do that from here?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out. But I travel a lot is what the real answer is. I leave Maine a lot because it's kind of hard to promote yourself. We're so disconnected from the rest of the country, from the rest of the world. But I recorded my music videos out in LA for the most part, and I've gone down to North Carolina a few times to be with the label and like do little voiceovers for Spotify and Pandora Music and radio stations. And they have been really amazing about promoting my record on radio stations. It's been like on, I don't know, 40 different stations or something, like the singles, and the record just came out on Friday.
So in a way, it's kind of like it used to work. You've got a label and they're promoting radio play.
They're kind of old school. Yep Rock is kind of old school compared to other labels. They're still really into vinyls.
You have to have vinyl?
I don't think you have to, but people love it. I think it's kind of back in, like maybe it was out for a little while, but it just feels really good to put on a record when you really like an artist.
Louisa Stanchoff of Warren has just released her debut album, When We Were Looking, which is also available on vinyl. Her current tour of the Northeast will include a number of shows in Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Keith Shortall.
I know you said you're sorry. I know you said you're gold. I know the give and take is more.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Friday morning, we'll discuss the idea of whether humans are governed by a social contract. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.